Following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Every person's story has something to teach us. How others view life, how obstacles are overcome, how joy is felt, how fears are faced, how love is expressed. The Matters of Faith podcast explores individual stories of people's lives and how faith plays a part. It may not be your story, but it may help shape yours.
The Matters of Faith podcast with Jay Wilburn is on Project Entertainment Network.
Monster Attack is coming right up after this word from our sponsor, Subculture Corsets and Clothing.
Hey, creepy McCreep persons. Looking for something out of the box to wear? Then you better visit subculturecorsets.com. Subculture Corsets and Clothing carries all of the unusual clothing and accessory brands for the steampunk, gothic, apocalypse, rockabilly, and pimp scenes. Or perhaps you're into Victorian goth. Whatever you freaks are into, most likely Subculture Corsets and Clothing will have something for you. Now, if you're a curvy lady, Subculture offers sizes 4 through 4X, and men's clothing as well, so no excuses. Visit subculturecorsets.com now for that new, exciting piece. Or visit their store at the Avenue Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half a mile off I-95. When checking out on Subculture's website, use the discount code MONSTERATTACK for 10% off your entire order. That's subculturecorsets.com. Discount code MONSTERATTACK. Check them out now. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Monster Attack. Now, as I promised you on the last podcast, we've got a recurring co-host back with us again, so let's just cut to the chase and bring her on in. Madeline Brumby has decided to come back with us again. Madeline, welcome aboard. Welcome back to Monster Attack.
Hello! Happy to be back.
It encourages me because we're not scaring people off, you know, and we're so people want to come back onto this podcast, and that's always a lot of fun, and you have made an incredible suggestion. Now, I teased everybody on the last podcast about this was going to be another very special show as far as the movie you picked. You're making some incredible selections. And I got to ask you, is this a movie that Shane introduced you to, or did you see this one further back when you were younger?
This one Shane introduced me to.
Yeah.
I did not see this one when I was younger. I suppose I am a recent fan of this film. It has become one of my favorites.
Oh, yes.
Which is great. That's the power of cinema and film.
That's right.
To live into eternity. And that something is recorded that I can, you know, find out about and love.
For those of you that are just joining this podcast for the first time, Madeline and I have done two podcasts together. I consider Madeline one of the contemporary scream queens of independent cinema right now, and we love having her on board here. 1959, we're going back to 1959, so I know it was a little before your time.
Just a little.
Yeah, just a little. House on Haunted Hill, what a great movie. I remember the first time I saw this movie, and I wish that I had seen it in the theater, because this was directed by a legendary monster movie director, William Castle, who was quite a showman and had all kinds of little gimmicks that he used to bring to the theater whenever he showed one of his films.
I wish I'd seen this in the theater when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the Emergo.
Yes, Emergo.
That would have been so much.
So I got to ask, because you and Shane Morton, you know, you guys do the Silver Screen Spook Show. Have you ever thought about getting a print of this movie and maybe finding a way to set up the Emergo process to sort of have some fun with this one during one of your showings?
Well, we did. Gosh, I guess it was our January spook show.
Oh, okay.
We did have a skeleton, and it went over well.
All right.
the skeleton playing himself, you know, and The crowd enjoyed it.
So, okay. Well, you said Skeleton was playing himself. Is it the same Skeleton that was in this movie? Because I noticed that was the credit he got at the end of House on Haunted Hill, Skeleton as himself. I thought that was pretty good.
I certainly hope so.
Leave it to William Castle. I had the pleasure of seeing a William Castle film when I was a kid, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, and I was frantically searching Google to see if I could find it. It was one of his gimmicks where the monsters came out of the screen and walked up the aisle. And it was sort of suggested for anybody that has not seen the movie Matinee. It is a wonderful film from the 90s that basically pays homage to William Castle Productions and to the guy. And they sort of showed it in their movie within a movie in Matinee, that same process where the big ant came out of the film, the guy dressed up and running around. We had about like four monsters. I think it was the Frankenstein monster and the mummy and the wolfman and a vampire or something. They all came out of the screen. And actually from behind the screen, because it was one of those big theaters, and run up the aisle. It was a little disappointing. I think I was about 10 years old, but it was still pretty cool. But I think the skeleton over the top would have been great. And the one they used for the Tingler with the seat buzzers, that would have been fun.
Oh, yeah, the Tingler.
Yeah. You know, that might have to be our next show. You know, we seem to be doing this Vincent Price thing.
Yes, absolutely. We're on a Vincent Price kick anyway, so.
So many people have loved the films that we have reviewed. I'm sure we're going to get some good strokes off this one. But, yeah, Vincent Price, you can't go wrong with it. The Tingler is one. Every time I mention it seems like that I do a podcast on old monster movies, I have a lot of people say, are you going to do The Tingler? Because that's, man, that just, I can't believe how that film stays in people's minds. This one runs a very close second. The House on Haunted Hill really left quite an impression on people, not only in 59, but a whole generations of folks that have caught it on TV and Svengoolie and some of the others. And by the way, and I do want to give a quick shout out to Svengoolie, because his folks adopted us, and we're linked up on Facebook now, and they've been very gracious to us and let us post our podcast announcements on their site. So way to go, Svengoolie. We always look forward to 10 o'clock on Saturday night. If I can't be there, I always have the DVR running. fun stuff. It's a trip back to the past. Well, let's talk a little bit about House on Haunted Hill. Again, as we said, Vincent Price in all of his glory, and a cast of very recognizable folks in this one. And our old buddy from our last podcast, Elijah Cook Jr., plays a very principal role in this film.
Certainly.
I love this guy. Every time he shows up, you know you're in for a good ride. I mean, that guy was born to play in these kind of movies with that sort of sad puppy dog face of his or whatever.
He does have that puppy dog face, but he always plays like a crazy neurotic,
yes,
or
yes,
a spineless. But his presence is so powerful.
Yes.
You are completely engaged with his performance, whatever it is.
It's awesome.
And that voice, that
I don't know how he does it with the eyes. He expresses so much with his eyes. I think some of that insanity and stuff when he was telling, okay, you've got five people that have been invited to this old house, well, not old house, but whatever, some very bizarre house, with an offer to make $10,000 if they can spend the night there. And he's telling the ghost stories, you know, apparently it's a
That's
haunted
right.
house. And as I tell you, even though it was a movie, I was getting creeped out. I get creeped out every time I watch this and listen to him tell the stories. I mean, he's really just a creepy guy, the characters that he plays in these films.
Oh, he sure is. I mean, the start of the film is, I mean, clearly you're in for a ride.
Yes.
And that their ride is particularly entertaining, as Vincent indicates that his wife has chosen that they arrive in hearses, which I think is great.
And the fun part about some of these movies is that, and especially with the Castle films, he has a ghost motif going. And of course, you know, for folks that are fans of William Castle's films, this film was released a little less than a year before we would see 13 Ghosts. And I see a lot of similarities between this film and 13 Ghosts. I think they're very, very similar in the story content and in the way the story is told, and the way that the ghosts weave themselves in and out of what is basically a murder mystery, I think.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
And I think it doesn't hurt that you've got music by Von Dexter, excuse me, choking on my words this morning, who scored both of those films, and it's a very clear influence on it. That whole piano score and the way it emphasizes the, you know, the different climactic scenes in this film really, really set the tale, and it's so much better than a big orchestration, I think. These are small boutique type films that really get under your skin and really leave an impression on you.
I agree. The piano, it's very intimate.
Yes.
The music, I think what's most portrayed is and the way the music brings you in is that you really do feel like you are in the haunted house with the characters.
Yeah.
It does feel intimate, and that you are part of this ride through the house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this sounds like an evening I would enjoy.
Oh, I know. I kept thinking, hey, I wonder if the offer still stands, because I'd go do it for 10 grand right now. Sure, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
10 grand is still good.
That's right. It's good.
even with today's dollars.
I'll tell you what, you know, and I was watching it again the other night. I was trying to make the conversion, trying to think, okay, how much money was that in 1959? I mean, that was a pretty good sum of money.
And I think they adjusted it for the remake.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I didn't like the remake as much.
I did not.
I've kind of forgotten, but I'm pretty sure they adjusted for inflation.
Right. Now, I can't remember the amount either. I'm like you. That's a very forgettable movie. And I'm sure there's some fans out there of the remake who aren't familiar with this one. But, yeah, that one and the remake of 13 Ghosts just didn't do it for me at all. They sort of missed the whole point of what was so much fun about these two movies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to cut to the chase here. Now, the one thing that sometimes will bug me when I watch films from back then, I mean, obviously the exterior shots are of a really cool-looking house. And it is an actual house out in the Los Angeles area, very strange, sort of a Frank Lloyd looking type house. But the interiors are clearly all shot on us.
Yeah, it is Frank Lloyd.
Yeah. House. Oh, I guess it was. Yeah.
I've visited it twice now.
Oh, cool.
And it's still in pretty good. I mean, it's, you can tell it's deteriorating a bit, but as soon as you drive up, it's totally impressive. And I've taken pictures in front of the gate where all the hearses drive in.
Yeah.
And it's a really neat, ominous looking property that has a spectacular view of downtown LA.
Yeah, it looks like it's up on a big hill. I mean, that it sits way up on a crust or something.
It is. It's quite up there. Mm-hmm. In Los Feliz. It's really neat. I would live there.
Now, are there people living there now, or is it just sort of a museum type thing or whatever?
No, it's not. I haven't done much research on the home like it's in its current state. I think somebody does own it and maintains it,
right.
But I do not think it is inhabited currently. There are definitely cameras set up outside, so I took a quick photo and dashed away.
You sound like you were shooting at Area 51 or something. Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's definitely a camera out here.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a quick photo and leave.
It would have been so cool. I'm glad I wasn't out there, just because I would want to go inside the house. I would just love to see what the inside of that place looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And see how close they got it. You know, I wonder if William Castle actually got to visit the location.
I am curious of the inside.
Yeah.
Definitely. I believe most of this film, all the interiors were shot on sound stages.
Oh, yeah, they were.
With
yeah.
the kind of Victorian
decorative.
Yeah. I am curious what that home looks like.
Right.
It's a mystery. I don't know if any published photos of the current or previous state of the interior of that home. But it was during the Egyptian phase of that one that was designed.
Yeah.
It was his like Egyptian period.
Right.
So
right.
I assume the exterior and interior reflected one another appropriately.
And I think Castle used the same idea, the same set design, not identical, but it's similar. In 13 Ghosts, you've got basically, you know, a long hallway with several rooms off each side for the bedrooms upstairs. And I thought the set design of this film was really cool. And then, of course, they had the big basement area like in 13 Ghosts, where all the fun stuff happens. Excellent. You know, so there's some similarities here, but I still love
all the acid.
Oh yeah, yeah.
These are real problems.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen this film, folks, one, you got to go see it. It's very easy to find a copy of this film. It's still a very, very popular film. But you've got a house in the basement. You've got a vat of acid, so you know something good's coming. You know, it comes in, you know something good is headed this way.
Always keep a vat of acid in your basement.
That's right.
You never know when that comes in handy.
I'm trying. You know, it's terrible now, and my mind's going blank. And of course, Elijah Cook Jr., who is sort of taking, you know, and knows the whole history of this house. He's the actual property owner that Vincent Price and his wife are renting or leasing this property from for her so-called birthday party. It's telling.
Yeah, just for the weekend, you know.
Right.
Because why not?
A little weekend party. And I can't remember why he said there was a vat of acid down there. It had something to do with the guy with the wine or something. He kept a big wine cellar or something down there. It had something to do with the former tenant's collection of wine or something like that. And I confess that I've gone blank on that one.
I remember him mentioning that it's just used by a previous resident.
Yeah.
I don't know, because he mentioned that all the deaths that have happened previously.
Yes.
So I don't know. It was extraneous at the time.
Right.
It's the only thing I remember is that there is definitely a vat of acid.
Yes. And of course, and the
because that has to be.
Oh, there. It has to be there. Yes, it's very critical at the end. And again, folks, you know, be forewarned. I'm going to, you know, this is going to be like about a 57 year spoiler alert, because you know you're going to find out why the vat of acid is there. So don't, if you don't want to know the ending of the movie, don't, you know,
yes,
stop us at some point here, and then go watch the movie, and then come back and listen to the podcast again. I still feel bad after almost 60 years. It's like I'm spoiling these movies. It's like, no, I'm not. But, you know, this is the whole thing with the deaths. And again, I'm glad you brought that up. There were, I think, if I remember correctly, 7 gruesome deaths that happened in this house. And that's what brought all these ghosts about, that they're having to jockey around for this night in the haunted house for the 10 grand.
Right. That's correct. 7 deaths.
And again, this is where I make similarities to the film that's going to come out, 13 Ghosts, because again, we're, you know, that was dealing with about 7 or 10 strange deaths or ghosts that were haunting that house as well. So there are some very, very distinct similarities between these two films.
Yes.
So we've got these gruesome deaths. I think it was, let's see, Elijah Cook Jr.'s character did have a connection to this, because it was his brother-in-law's wife or something killed someone.
Yeah.
Someone there, or 2 people there. And then you've got all these other crazy people that he mentions that have committed these gruesome murders there. And I think one of the murders did involve the vat of acid, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think, I really feel like it was another, like, murdering of a wife.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
I feel like that's what he mentions.
Right. And, of course, we've got Vincent Price's character. And he is, he's the big rich guy. He's the one that's got all the money. Obviously, he's offering everybody $10,000 apiece. And his wife, who, as is very apparent right from the beginning.
Yeah, his greedy wife.
Yeah, they don't get along too well. She is your typical, she's really painted as sort of the blonde gold digger right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And, of course, a perfect casting on this one. I love this gal. Carol Omart plays the wife. And for those of you that might not be familiar with her name, you're going to recognize her. She was in a ton of films. And most recently, one that we both have commented on that is a favorite of ours, Spider Baby, that came out about this time as well.
Yeah.
But Carol Omart was being sort of promoted by the studio as the next Marilyn Monroe. She had that platinum blonde look. She had that sort of buxom, sexy look that they were trying to cash in on for this one, and they definitely play it to the hilt in this film.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely gorgeous.
He even remarks on it several times as how perfect she is, but such a bitch.
Yeah. And it's very, very, very clear. This is a strained relationship. It's her birthday party, and she wanted to have the people in the house to spend the night or whatever, but now she's not even going to attend the party, or at least we start out with a very tense scene where it's very, very clear that we're sort of focused in the direction that Vincent Price may be up to no good this evening, that he sort of wanted to get rid of her. That's sort of the impression we're left with early on.
Yes, and that she's trying to get rid of him. she's just being so snippy at the beginning there, remarking on the champagne and how he ruins it by shaking it. And he's like, well, maybe it'll explode.
I love that. Of course, the thing that I noticed, even as a kid, he's shaking it up. So we're all waiting for this to happen. And then when he pops the cork, it's like nothing. Yeah. It's like nothing. It's like, boop. And it's like, okay, what kind of champagne is this? What do you do? Get this at Walmart or something? Because, man, there's nothing to it. Must have been the most
was awful stuff. Bubbles of all.
Awful stuff. Yeah. Either that or was that sparkling grape juice. I don't know, but it just didn't have any pop to it. So let's meet some of the cast of characters. We've already met Elijah Cook Jr. It's really cool, I love this. This is typical William Castle. The one thing, folks, you can count on, and go back and watch all of these William Castle films. Yeah, so, sometimes the scripting isn't the greatest. They're cheaply made. Well, I won't say that. I don't want to give the wrong impression. Actually, they all look pretty well. Castle was a very good producer for the money that he had at his disposal. But all of his films are a lot of fun. And one thing can be said about William Castle, he was a showman. And all of the people arrived this evening in a funeral procession led by a hearse. And then all the little funeral cars behind it. And I said, right out of the blocks, the man is right there on his game, setting the tone for how this movie's going to go.
Oh, yeah. He's already painted quite a picture before the movie. I mean, we're not even, I think, 5 minutes in.
Right.
And you know what's up.
and this.
He's pulled in the audience immediately. I mean, it's just good filmmaking and good storytelling right off the bat. And I love it.
Oh, that's right. And
you're invested completely. You want to know what happens to this cast of characters.
That's right. And I really think this is why Joe Dante wanted to pay homage to William Castle when he made the film Matinee. Because everything that I've read about in every sort of documentary interview that I've seen on William Castle's career, people love this guy. I mean, they loved working with him. They just, in the industry, he had such a high regard to a certain extent. Even though he never felt like he really got his just due, and his family always felt like, you know, Hollywood didn't recognize him for his genius. He was the producer of Rosemary's Baby, so he did have a chance to do some real high quality stuff later on in his career, and it was vindicated to a certain extent along those lines.
His repertoire is so impressive, and this film was actually quite successful for the time.
Yeah.
It was supremely successful. For the figures I could find, it was $150,000 to make and produce, and then made $4 million.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was quite that was a supremely successful film.
It still is. In my opinion, you know, in the films that we're in nowadays as actors, I would take it any day in the week. I mean, that's great. That's a great turnaround.
Totally.
All of his films did well, and I've got to say, and I don't know for sure, I've got to say this one's got to be pretty high up on his list of the monster films or the horror films that he produced. Not counting Rosemary's Baby, obviously, that was just an incredibly successful film. But I think, you know, Tingler, House on Haunted Hill, 13 Ghosts, and some of the others, Macabre, Screaming Skull. I mean, he had a bunch. These were the fodder for my generation growing up. These were the movies that we saw Saturday afternoon at the downtown movie theater, and we loved every one of them. I mean, just, and especially if it was a movie that had a gimmick with it. These were the ones that were so memorable. There's an entire generation of people that just love this kind of movies. And again, the fun part about this movie is there are some very, very scary moments in this, some very intense and frightening moments, but it's still pretty much a murder film. It's pretty much a murder mystery. It's almost like, I kept thinking, it's almost like watching a game of Clue on the screen because it sort of plays itself out there.
Oh, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is like playing and watching a game of Clue. Yeah. It is so much fun, and you're still trying to figure out who it is and who done it. And there are some terrifying moments, especially if on first viewing, you don't know what's up. Who's trying to kill who?
That's
and
right.
Is it the wife or the husband? And what are they up to? And
and there's a classic scene that I always see whenever someone's talking about this film. They use this one particular scene, and it involves one of the younger actresses, Carolyn Craig, who plays sort of the young ingenue in this film. And she's supposedly an employee of Vincent Price's character. He doesn't know who she is, but he knows she's an employee.
Whom she has never met.
Right, she's never met him, and she's desperate for the money because her family, we find out, was in a terrible automobile accident. And now she's the only one who can work and make a living for the family. So, yeah, he knew she was in need of the $10,000. And Carolyn Craig, you might not recognize her at first, but one of the films that she's very recognizable in was Giant, which came out a couple of years, or I think it was right about this time. I think Giant was right around 58 or 59, but she had a very short career, and she died young. It was sad.
She did. She did not live very long. She only lived till she was 36 or so.
Yeah, in her 30s, yeah.
She was very prolific, but did not have, sadly, did not have a very long life, but she accomplished a lot.
She did.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure she shot herself.
Just a real, real tragic story.
Mm-hmm.
In fact.
Yeah, but she is fantastic in this film.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, and I kept.
Her screen is perfect.
That's it.
I need to practice that.
There you go.
Her screen is so good.
You know, it's funny. We just did a, 2 weeks ago, we did a podcast on the original King Kong. And, of course, we were introduced and talked a lot about Fay Wray, the original Scream Queen of the cinema. I mean, the one who actually, it was her that allowed that term to get invented. And I kept thinking, watching this the other night, man,
right.
She ought to be a Scream Queen. I mean, I don't think she had that kind of scream. I don't think she did any screaming in Giant. That's another film I haven't seen in many years. But it's like, wow. I mean, it's piercing. It is so unique, and it's very effective in this. In fact, I would say for about the first half of this movie, you wonder if that's all she's going to do. But it really sets the table pretty quickly.
Yeah, they love it so much. I mean, clearly, Colin Castle loved it so yeah. much. He's like, just keep going.
Keep screaming, yeah, just scream.
keep going. But I think that, right? And I can only imagine the audience must have been, like, so tense.
Yeah.
When that was happening, watching this film for the, I imagine that it was an excellent film experience to see in the theater, like with a full crowd.
Cause yes.
There's so many people attended the film back then. Mm-hmm. And that was like, you know, an activity that you did weekly.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. I bet that was so much fun in a full theater watching it for the first time.
Absolutely.
With an Imurgo. If the Movie Palace had one,
yep.
I bet that was just the greatest experience.
Well, I know on the Castle film that I saw, and again, I cannot think of the gimmick's name because he had a name for all of these. You don't know what's going to happen. That adds to the experience. So these people, I'm going to have to pretty sound guessing on this, that they're sitting in the theater. They have no idea what a Murgo is going to do, but they know it's coming. you never know what's going to happen. And of course, I think the Tingler had come out.
It's great.
The Tingler had come out a couple of years before this one, so you know, you've got to imagine the words getting around. Well, you know, the last time he shocked everybody in the seats, you know, or whatever. So you're like, okay, what is this one going to be? You know, it's like,
oh my what, God.
So I think that adds to the and this is the genius of William Castle, because it, you know, it's more than just what's on the screen. And I think sometimes nowadays filmmakers forget that it's the entire experience that's so important. And I'm with you. These are the kind of movies that are so much fun to watch in the actual theater and get that whole experience with the, you know, with the skeleton flying overhead. And of course, there's some great stories about Imurgo as it caught on, that it ended up being someone who worked for William Castle. One of his technicians was interviewed a few years ago. I got a big kick out of, he was talking about when this film was out there with Imurgo, and he said, well, it became sort of the skeleton coming over the head became the target of a lot of young kids with straws and spitballs. He said it would just make a terrible mess after the movie was over.
Gross. Just throw popcorn. Don't do spitballs.
That's right. And I think originally Castle wanted it to drip blood because, you know, you see in the beginning of this film, in particular parts of the house where the gruesome murders took place,
yeah,
where the blood had dripped through the ceiling. And the one gal, and I can't think of her name now, the older woman who was, I just blanked on her name. But, you know, she was like,
Julie Mitchell.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. She was like a compulsive gambler, her character, you know, so she needed the money because, you know, she lost all her money gambling. And she's the first one that has the blood drip down her hand. And I believe that Castle wanted the skeleton in Emergo to drip blood, but the other producers were like, the studio said, yeah, I think we got some liability issues with that. We better not do that. We'll let you bring the skeleton over, but the dripping of the blood, we're gonna have to, you know, we're gonna have to pass on that one.
Well, they could have just put water on it. That would have been effective enough.
Well, you know, and stage blood is basically sugar water.
Water.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and stage blood is just sugar water and food coloring for the most part. So, you know, if kids ate it, it's like it's not going to kill them. You know. Oh, well, but anyway, those were the days.
Getting ideas for future spook shows.
There you go. Yeah, that, yeah. Do Emergo again and drip blood on this one.
Yeah.
There you go. So we got some other very recognizable characters now, and I got way off the path here. What I meant to say with Carolyn Craig's scream, we see right off the beginning when they're exploring the house and she finds herself alone in a room and she bends down to pick something up and lift and it stands up and here's this horrific face staring there and it goes floating off by her. I think that's probably one of the most seen clips I've ever seen from this film. Every time someone is talking about House on Haunted Hill, they show that clip, which we later find out is one of the caretakers. It's like, what a downer. Oh, I thought it was a real ghost. I don't know where they found that woman, but she was perfect. She was great. She will always be remembered for that role. It's like, yep, didn't say anything, but by God, she had that face. And I just want to mention the last couple of characters we're going to see. There's some very familiar characters. Richard Long, who plays sort of the playboy in this movie or whatever, you know, the young good-looking playboy. People remember him from Big Valley and Nanny and the Professor. He had quite a...
Yeah, the test pilot hero.
The test pilot, yeah. And, of course, he's another one that had sort of a tragic life. He died in his 40s of cancer. And, of course, every time you look at this movie, he's lighting up a cigarette. So it's like, yeah, okay, I can start to see that one. It's like everybody smoked back then, just nonstop. And then Alan Marshall, who actually is going to be hard to recognize from his previous work, but his most famous movie was he was in The Hunchback of Notre Dame with Charles Laughton. He had quite a big role in that one. And he's had quite a career. I think he might have been the one who lived longer than anybody in this movie, if I remember correctly. So you've got quite an interesting cast of veteran players in this movie, and I think that's another mark of what makes Castle's films so much fun. As he gets these people all together, there's always an amazing chemistry with these movies.
Oh yeah, this was an excellent cast for this film. They bring you in and you're invested.
Yes, very much so. And of course, we get Carol Omart, who's playing the wife, does show up. She does decide to show up for the birthday party after all. And then the fun begins and people start, now they're all looking for things and trying to figure out who's going to murder who and all that stuff. And then we get a murder right out of the blocks. I mean, right almost immediately we've got.
No time wasted. This movie's only an hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. We got to get these murders in right.
That's
away.
Right. And of course, so let's murder the wife. We find the wife hanging at the top of the stairs and another chance for Carolyn Craig to exercise her lungs some more.
Yes. More screams. Always more screams.
Now, and I got to admit, I never saw a lot of this coming. But so we've got, so now the wife is out of the picture. And of course, we're immediately directed to Vincent Price's character. It's like the table had been set for his character. Yeah, okay, he pulled it off. This was all staged so that he could get rid of her, and it appears like they have. And of course, so you've got these characters all, you know, like, okay, how are we going to do this? How are we going to be safe? They decide they're going to stay in their rooms, protect themselves, and wait for, I think it was 10 hours that they had to wait until 8 o'clock that next morning so they could claim their $10,000. And, of course, that's where the tension builds is nobody's going to stay in their rooms. And everybody's on the lookout for one thing or another. And we've got the young gal, Carolyn Craig, who ends up, and I'm cutting to the chase here pretty quick, runs to Richard Long's character and says, hey, he tried to kill me. You know, this guy, he tried to kill me, Vincent Price's character. And I don't know what to do. And Richard Long says, well, we're going to keep you hidden away, and we'll make them think that you're still dead. Because, you know, for people that wanted to stay in their rooms and stay out of harm's way, it seemed funny. They always found a reason to all meet up in the living room again. That just happened nonstop. They always put themselves in a position.
Right? They're only in their rooms for, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, she's...
So they're like, I'm going to meet back in the living room.
And Carolyn Craig's character is the only one that pretty much stays in her room for most of this movie, it seems like. But you've got Richard Long looking around. I mean, he gets banged up right in the beginning of this film. He gets whacked in the head and thinks, no, it's nothing, you know.
Right.
And, of course, and then you've got Elijah.
It's nothing. They just put a Band-Aid on.
Right. And Elijah Cook's character is the prophet of doom. Is like, oh, they're active. They're going to come get us. They're going to kill us. Oh, my God. And of course, you know, then when all this stuff happens, it just feeds the fire. And we think the wife is dead, but then we later find out she's not dead, and that she's the bad guy. Okay, I'm going to spoil it. She's the bad guy in this film. Apparently, this has all been set up to kill Vincent Price's character so she can get all the money, because she's got a little affair going on with one of the people who's there spending the night. It was all staged.
That's right. But I have a feeling that she was, if she had gotten her way,
yeah.
I have a feeling if the movie had continued on for another 15 minutes that she would have murdered her lover too.
Probably so. Probably so. Or like 15 ghosts, we would have real ghosts.
She was very greedy.
That's right. Either that or the real ghosts would push her in the vat of acid. But you know, somewhere along the line, we knew that some of these people were going into that vat of acid. And sure enough, they did. We've got a big fight scene when we realize that Vincent Price really wasn't really the bad guy in this one. He was actually okay, and he gets into a fight with the with this other guy, that Alan Marshall's character, who plays this doctor, this psychiatrist. Of course, this is the part that I love about, again, Castle Films. Folks, you got to remember that, and I don't think I mentioned this, there's no electricity in this house, no electricity whatsoever. So everything is lit with gas lights, which seem to just go out constantly during this movie, during critical times. And it's like, okay, this isn't like electricity. This is gas. So they're always having to relight, you know, and I kept thinking, and as a kid, it didn't bother me. I didn't catch it. But later on in years when I was watching this, thinking, you know, if those lights kept going out like that, wouldn't the gas keep going on? And couldn't it blow up or whatever? But I guess, you know, that might have been a little logic problem. I mean, seriously.
And then they're all smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Too. And everybody's smoking constantly in this thing. So you've got a key scene where Vincent Price and the doctor are fighting, of course, near the vat of acid. And just as it comes to a climax, all the lights go out, and you hear this struggling. Oh! And you hear a splash. So you go, well, somebody's toast. Until the lights come on and nobody's there.
Yep.
And we later find out that poor doctor didn't quite do well in that fight. And then, of course, we have a big confrontation in the end with the wife is supposed to come down because she's expecting Vincent Price's character to be killed. And he wasn't, because he foresaw this coming, and they all had guns to protect themselves. But he put blanks and key guns so that when people thought he was shot, he wasn't shot. And then, of course, wife ends up in the vat of acid as well. And as we come to the end of this film with everyone asking, how do I get my money? <You know? laughs> I mean, it really cuts. that it's funny how through this whole thing, it's like, yeah, wait a minute. Okay, I know he's dead, but do I still get my money? And you're still left sort of wondering.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what happened with all these ghosts. Or do we have, and of course, you got Elijah saying, oh, we're going to have more ghosts. Now, you know, we just keep adding to the numbers.
Yeah, well, then he says his line is, and then they'll come for you.
Yes.
And, you know, turns to the audience, which I think is just so fun and so effective.
It is.
Because, like, yeah, we know you've been watching this whole time. Get ready.
You know, and again, this is another one of those signatures of William Castle. Because, you know, in The Tingler, we have the monster getting loose in a movie theater. So you're in there in a movie theater watching it. And so it's sort of that personal touch. It's like, okay, now we're actually bringing you into this movie. And in 13 Ghosts, it was the same thing. You had sort of the ghosts coming at you in 3D on the screen at the end saying, oh, we're still there. And the same thing here with Cook saying, yep, we're not done with you yet. So even if you turn this, you know, this movie goes off or whatever, we're still there. We're still going to come get you wherever you are. So he loved doing that, putting, I think, that signature on a lot of the horror films that he put together. I think it's a real signature for William Castle on these.
Oh, yeah. You don't forget them.
So you guys, have we given you some ideas now, Madeline, for another silver screen showing that maybe you and Shane will maybe incorporate some? Maybe you could come up with a gimmick of your own for one of Castle's films. I think he would sort of get it if he was around.
I think so. I think this one could be expanded upon for future shows. Yeah. I'm now envisioning a little bit of blood action and maybe bugs fall off of the skeleton.
Oh,
I don't
God,
know.
No, bugs.
Which would probably just be popcorn falling Whew. Off the skeleton. You know, it's always fun when the theater is dark. You can't tell what it is.
Yeah.
That are like wet mop pieces. That's a good
silly
one.
Silly string sometimes. I know that the feeling of that in the dark when you don't know what it is sort of plays into a couple of fears that I have. It has that feeling of sort of raking across your skin. It's like, you know. So you can certainly take some cues from the master. But, folks, House on Haunted Hill. I know we spoiled the whole ending for you, but still go watch this movie. And I think you've got it.
It's still going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry.
And I think this is one of those ones you invite all the friends over, get it on a big screen, and make up a lot of popcorn, turn out all the lights, and just have a blast with it. I think it's the perfect film for that. And
yes.
And
you can have your own little game of murder and then you can play Clue afterwards.
Yeah, there you go. I mean the key's in, like, I mean, at the beginning of this film we've got Elijah Cook Jr. and Vincent Price both introducing this movie, and of course Vincent Price in his inimitable style just says, Yeah, we're having some friends over. Maybe there'll be some murders, you know. It sets the table for this so well. So that's it, folks. House on Haunted Hill, 1959. Yeah. And again, just don't worry about the remake of this one because it just doesn't stand up. The experience of this one. And you know, there's folks out there still, we've talked about this before, that don't like to watch films that are in black and white. This is one of those films where black and white really enhances the effect, I think. I don't think this film would have been as effective if it had been shot in color. I really don't. I think it would have hurt it.
I think you're totally, totally right. I do not think it would have been as wonderful in color.
Yeah, you have to have that dark, dreary sort of impression. And this is somewhat of a claustrophobic film. I mean, like you were saying in the beginning, you really feel like you're stuck in this house with these people all locked in because they're sort of like locked into prison, can't get away after midnight. And Castle does a great job of bringing you into that atmosphere. And it's one of those things that makes the house so effective. Now,
I think what he says is once the door is locked, there's no way.
That's
out.
Right. It's like a bank vault.
Oh.
You know,
you know, why not? That's how all
houses
need to be made, I suppose.
That's right. Better than any Walt Disney ride that you'll ever get on. And if you have it at home, I don't know if I'd recommend putting up a pulley system and a skeleton, but hey, knock yourself out, folks, and have some fun with this one. House on Haunted Hill. So what are we going to do next time, Madeline, when we get together? We'll have time. What are we going to do? Talk about The Tingler, maybe, or something like that? Pick another. What do you think?
Yeah, that's sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds great. What a tingler.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to install a buzzer.
I'm all for it.
I'm going to install a buzzer on my office seat, and if you'll do that, have Shane or someone hook one up for you there, and then we'll buzz ourselves during the Tingler podcast just to be in the spirit of things.
Well, I think the whole point was that you didn't know when you were going to get
No, buzzed. You didn't.
Can you imagine being that woman that guy in the theater, like, that sat in that one chair? I mean, I might have peed my pants, or my dress, whatever it was,
yeah,
back in the day.
That's right. You just didn't know it was coming.
You know?
And that movie, and again, folks, I can't wait to do that podcast. That movie left such an indelible impression on me, too. And when I go through looking at my top tens from those days back then and all the monster movie matinees, I got to say, William Castle's films are pretty prevalent on that list. And House on Haunted Hill and Tingler are big ones. Madeline, as always, it's been a lot of fun, and I'm so glad you had a chance to sit in with us again. And now I'm looking forward to the next time when we get together for the Tingler. We'll have some fun with that one.
Oh, my pleasure. I look forward to the Tingler. Hey, it'll be fun.
Tell everybody in the Atlanta area, because we have a lot of fans here in the Atlanta that listen to this podcast, when is your next Silver Screen Spook Show, and what you guys got coming on?
Oh, we have another spook show in, at the end of April, I believe, is our next
Outstanding.
One.
Outstanding.
Should everything go to schedule.
Yeah.
And then also working on Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. The next episodes are coming out very soon.
Yeah.
And that's about it for excitement. And then Frankenstein Created Bikers is arriving
yes.
on DVDs any day now.
fun movie, folks. Fun movie. And hey, you know what? Hey, pass on to Shane. One of these days, they got to cast me in Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. One of these days, I got to be on that show.
Oh, yeah. Sure do.
All right. Hey, Madeline, thanks so much. Have a great one. And
we got to get you in there as a demon.
Oh, we'll do it. I'm ready, man. I'm ready. So anyway, we'll look forward to the next time on the Tingler. And folks, next week we've got another very special show. We've got a special co-host sitting in with us, and we're going to be talking about one of the king of all the monsters. And you're going to want to listen to that. But look for this episode coming up Monday after this one. And we'll have some fun. And we'll decide when we're going to do that Tingler episode. Well, that'll be coming up fairly soon. All righty. Thanks, folks. Have a good one, and we'll see you next Monday.
Hi, this is Brian Keene. I'm an international best-selling, award-winning horror novelist.
No comment!
I know where the bodies are buried, and now I'm telling you their location every week on The Horror Show.
Pardon no comment, don't you understand?
We discuss the latest news in horror novels, movies, comics, and games, and interview the biggest names in the business.
This interview is over! No comment!
Thursday nights at 7 p.m. only on
Project Entertainment Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, Project Entertainment Network presents The Mondo Method. Introducing the mentor, he's the greatest manager of all time, Mondo Guerrero.
And
parts unknown, up-and-coming superstar, the Great Buddha.
Okay, so their names are really Armand Rosamilia and Chuck Buddha. And old man Armand is going to teach Whippersnapper Chuck how to write a book. And maybe you too, while they're at it. With marketing morsels from Aaron Sweet Al-Bahari. Exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.